Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 FY20 earnings conference call of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, moderator. Welcome to Glenmark's Q1 earnings call. First, the review of operations for the quarter ended June 30th, 2019. For the first quarter of FY19-20, Glenmark's consolidated revenue was at 23,228 million, recording an increase of 7.26%. India business. Sales from the formulation business in India for the first quarter was at 7,522 million, recording growth of 13.41%. The India business continued to outperform the industry growth as per IQVIA Q1 FY20. Glenmark's India business recorded growth of 12% compared to IPM growth of 10%. As per IQVIA MAT June 2019, Glenmark's India formulation business is ranked 14th with market share of 2.18%. In April 2019, Glenmark announced the launch of its novel patent-protected and globally researched SGLT2 inhibitor, remoglufosine etabonate, in India. Glenmark is the first company in the world to launch remoglufosine. The response from KOLs has been extremely positive, which has resulted in this being one of the successful product launches for the India business. As per IQVIA June 2019, the sales for remoglufosine is already tracking at INR 2 crores per month in less than 2 months from launch. In July 2019, Glenmark announced that it has entered into a non-exclusive sub-licensing arrangement agreement with Torrent Pharmaceuticals Limited to co-market remoglufosine etabonate in India. Glenmark is also targeting to close one more co-marketing deal for remoglufosine in the second quarter. The company is also developing various line extensions for remo, which would be launched over the next 12 months. India, the Glenmark consumer care business. Glenmark consumer care business continues its strong growth trajectory in Q1 FY20. The consumer business grew around 27% to record sales of 556.30 million for the first quarter. Multiple line extensions were launched in first quarter FY19-20, such as the VWash Pikni line, Scalp Pro, anti-dandruff shampoo. The business growth was observed in all retail channels across chemists, modern trade, and e-commerce. U.S. Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Inc. U.S. registered revenue of 7,308 million, $105.16 million, as against 7,037 million, which is $105.21 million for the previous corresponding quarter. The generic business. In the first quarter of FY20, Glenmark was granted final approval and launched solifenicin succinate tablets. The company also obtained three additional approvals during the first quarter. Even though the company has normalized supplies of mupirocin cream, the product sales have been impacted due to changes in the reimbursement environment and higher patient copay for mupirocin cream, which is reflecting in the increasing share of prescriptions for mupirocin ointment as against mupirocin cream. As per IQVIA June 2018, total prescriptions for mupirocin ointment were 851,865, and the total prescriptions for mupirocin creams were 56,490. As compared to that, mupirocin cream ointments prescriptions were 879,000 approximately, which was 97%, and total prescriptions of mupirocin cream decreased significantly in June 2019 to 31,068. The overall generic topical dermatology market also continues to witness significant price erosion for the third consecutive quarter. Despite the decline of mupirocin cream, the company witnessed flat growth in Q1. The company anticipates two significant generic approvals, a limited competition injectable approval, and a topical product with a CGT designation in the second quarter of FY19-20, which would provide further impetus to the U.S. generic business. The company filed three ANDA applications with the U.S. FDA in the first quarter and plans to file an additional four applications in the forthcoming quarter. Manufacturing facilities. Glenmark has five U.S. FDA-approved manufacturing facilities, Goa, Indore, Baddi, Aurangabad, and Monroe. In July 2019, the US FDA inspected the manufacturing facility in Monroe, North Carolina. The inspection covered the OSD injectable and the nebulizer units and concluded with the facility receiving one observation. The company will respond to the observation as per the regulatory timeline. Since this inspection was also a pre-approval inspection, it is expected to facilitate the approvals of Glenmark's first in-house injectable product in the fourth quarter of FY20. The company has received a letter from the US FDA classifying the inspection conducted at its Baddi facility from 15 to 20th April 2019 as official action indicated. The company has responded in detail to all the observations made in the Form 483 and is awaiting further information and clarity from the US FDA. The company is committed to implement the necessary corrective actions required to address the procedural deficiencies raised by the US FDA and will resolve them as soon as possible. The manufacturing and sale of existing products from this facility will not be impacted. Glenmark has no other outstanding observations of the US FDA at any of its other formulation manufacturing facilities. Specialty business, GTI, dermatology. In FY19, Glenmark announced its foray into the branded dermatology segment in the US when GTI acquired the rights to 7 branded dermatology products from Exeltis USA. During the first quarter of FY19-20, the sales from this franchise has been insignificant and the response from the market has been far below expectations. Ryaltris nasal spray is the company's leading respiratory pipeline asset and is currently under review with the US FDA as a treatment for seasonal allergic rhinitis in the US. The company is currently in the process of bringing in a partner to commercialize Ryaltris in the US market. Additionally, Glenmark is close to concluding a partnership deal for Ryaltris for EU markets. The company has already completed partnership deals for Ryaltris in other markets such as Australia, New Zealand, South Korea and China. The company will continue evaluating partnership opportunities in various markets and also launch the product in some of our key operating markets. During the first quarter, the US FDA issued a CRL regarding the new drug application for Ryaltris. The CRL cited deficiencies in the drug master file pertaining to one of the active pharmaceutical ingredients and in the manufacturing facilities. The CRL did not specify any deficiencies with clinical data supporting the NDA for Ryaltris. The company is targeting to resolve these issues pertaining to the CRL in the next 6 to 9 months by working closely with the FDA and will continue to pursue regulatory approval for Ryaltris. Africa, Asia and CIS region. For the first quarter, revenue from this region was at $2587 million, recording an increase of 5.43%. As per IQVIA MAC 2019, Glenmark Russia recorded growth of 7.2% in value vis-a-vis overall retail market growth of 3.8%. The Asia region recorded moderate performance in the first quarter of FY19-20 with secondary sales growth degrowing by 3%. The Africa region also recorded moderate growth in the first quarter and witnessed new product launches in markets such as Kenya and Egypt. Europe. Glenmark's Europe operations revenue for the first quarter was at $2428 million, recording an increase of 10.50%. During the first quarter, the Western European business continued to expand through increased penetration in UK, Germany, Spain and Netherlands, while Nordic countries witnessed some degrowth. Overall, Western European business recorded growth of 10%. The Central and Eastern European region recorded moderate growth in the first quarter. During the first quarter, multiple new products were launched across major countries of the European region. The company also signed 2 in-licensing agreements during the first quarter. Latin America. Glenmark's revenue from Latin America and Caribbean was at $811 million, recording a decrease of 16.89%. The company's overall performance remained subdued in the region in the first quarter. In June 2019, Glenmark announced that its Brazilian subsidiary has entered into an exclusive partnership with Novartis AG for 3 respiratory products indicated towards the treatments and symptoms of COPD. Under the terms of the agreement, Novartis will remain the holder of the registration of these medicines and will be responsible for manufacturing and supply. Glenmark will be responsible for exclusively promoting, commercializing and distributing of these products in Brazil. The deal is expected to strengthen Glenmark's respiratory franchise and further consolidate the company's position in Brazil. GPL Specialty Innovation R&D Pipeline, GBR310. During FY18-19, Glenmark announced results from a phase 1 study that suggests similarity in pharmacokinetic, pharmacodynamic, safety and immunogenicity profiles between GBR310 and the reference product omalizumab. The company is in active discussion with potential partners and is targeting to conclude a deal before initiating phase 3 studies. GSP304, this program is currently ongoing in phase 2 for patients with mild to moderate COPD as established by the Global Initiative for COPD. GRC-39815. GRC-39815 is an NCE currently being evaluated as an inhaled compound for the treatment of COPD. It is an inhibitor of the ROR-Y gamma T. The compound is currently in preclinical development and the company plans to initiate a phase 1 study in FY20. Glenmark Life Sciences. For the first quarter of FY20, external sales of Glenmark Life Sciences was at 2036.01 million as against 2100 million, recording growth of 9.77% over the corresponding quarter. The domestic and LATAM regions led the growth in the first quarter, with both regions recording 20% plus growth over the corresponding period last year. GLS has three US FDA approved API manufacturing facilities, Ankleshwar, Dahej and Mohol. In July 2019, the US FDA and Health Canada jointly inspected the Ankleshwar manufacturing facility of GLS. Subsequently, the US FDA issued a Form 483 with four observations. GLS has responded to the observations within the specified time period. Innovation New Company. As part of a strategy to create a leading and cutting-edge biotech organization, Glenmark announced the spin-off of its innovation business into a new company headquartered in the US. Setting up of this company would provide enhanced focus to the business and help accelerate the pipeline towards commercialization. The new innovation company will be a wholly owned subsidiary of Glenmark. The subsidiary creation process is on track, with various work streams such as HR, finance, legal, branding and IT systems transition currently under progress. The company expects to announce the name of the new innovation organization by mid-October 2019. During this period, the NewCo would also announce the strategic blueprint for the new innovation organization with the objective of becoming a leading cutting-edge biotech company in the near future. NewCo has also instituted an independent board of directors which would govern the functioning of the new innovation organization. During the first quarter of FY20, Glenmark invested $1,900,000, USD 27.34 million, in the NewCo innovation business. During the financial year 18-19, Glenmark invested approximately USD 113 million in the innovation business, and the company expects to invest a similar amount in the current financial year. NewCo would initiate the process to raise capital in the US starting Q4 FY19-20 to fund the development of its pipeline and for future growth. Update on the clinical pipeline. GBR-830, a phase 2B study of GBR-830 has been initiated and will enroll 312 patients with moderate to severe atopic dermatitis. As of July 2019, 225 patients have been recruited, with 80 sites actively open to enroll patients in US, Canada, Germany, Czech Republic and Poland. Of the 225 enrolled patients, 71 subjects have been completed, a 16-week treatment period, and 60 subjects have been rolled over to the 52-week open-label extension study. Top-line results of the Phase 2B studies in AD are expected to be available in H1-CY-2020. GRC-27864, an MPGS-1 inhibitor, is an orally bioavailable inhibitor for the MPGS-1. Enrollment of a Phase 2B study in 624 patients with osteoarthritic pain of the knee and hip is progressing as per plan, with 47 active sites and 519 patients recruited for the study as of July 2019. Top-line results of the Phase 2B study are expected to be available in Q1-CY-2020. GRC-17536, a positive Phase 2A proof-of-concept study of 17536, is conducted in Europe and India in patients with painful diabetic neuropathy, has been completed. The company is targeting to initiate a Phase 2B dose-range-finding study in neuropathic pain in CY-2020. GBR-1302 Phase 1 first-in-human study with bi-weekly dosing to determine the MTD in patients with HER2-positive cancer has completed enrollment as of May 2019. The company plans to initiate a Phase 1 study to evaluate a weekly dosing regimen in H2-CY-2019. GBR-1342, a Phase 1 first-in-human study to determine the MTD in a bi-weekly dosing regimen in patients with refractory multiple myeloma, is ongoing. Cohorts 1 to 9 have been completed and the study continues with the enrollment of patients into cohort 10. The company has amended the current protocol to include a weekly dosing regimen in the current study, and the enrollment into the weekly dosing regimen is expected to begin in H2-CY-2019. The company is also developing GRC-5XXX, a MAP4K1 inhibitor compound, which has the potential to be used as a monotherapy or in combination with approved therapies to address unmet medical needs in cancer treatment. The compound is currently progressing through preclinical studies The company is targeting to initiate phase 1 studies in H2 CY2020. A few notes. The gross debt as on June 30, 2019 was at 4568 crores as compared to 4448 crores as on March 31, 2019. Net debt as on June 30, 2019 was at 3545 crores as compared to 3427 crores as on March 31, 2019. R&D expenditure for the quarter was at 295 crores, which is 12.70% to net sales. Innovation R&D expenditure was at 190 crores for the first quarter. Total asset additions during the first quarter was at 198 crores, which includes 118 crores of fixed assets, 10 crores of computer software, and 70 crores of brands in licensed. Forex loss during the quarter was at INR 25.2 crores, which was recorded in other expenditure. Thus, EBITDA after considering Forex loss was at 367.1 crores. With this, I would like to introduce Glenmark's management. We have Glenn Saldanha, Chairman and Managing Director, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. V.S. Money, Executive Director and CFO, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. Robert Matsuk, President, North America. And Utkarsh Gandhi, Deputy General Manager, Investor Relations and Strategy. With this, we would like to open the floor for question and answers. Over to you, moderator.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking your question. Anyone who would like to ask a question, please press star and one at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and good morning. So first question on this target revenue growth of 10 to 15%, given the fact that we have grown 7%. So which areas we are seeing or expecting higher growth? The U.S. derm portfolio continues to be under pressure. So just wanted to understand your thoughts.
So I think, we are expecting a strong second quarter, right? And I think from second quarter onwards, you'll see growth pretty much across all our businesses. I think India, with the launch of Remo, I think you should continue. If you see the July IMS numbers which just came out, right, Denmark's business grew at 20% in July, right? So India continues to be a strong growth destination for Glenmark. If I look at Latin America, which has been underperforming, I mean, Latin America, because of the Novartis deal that we just concluded in Brazil, you will see, significant growth numbers kicking in from Q2 onwards. So that deal, from day one, we accrue all the revenues that they were accruing so far. So I think Latin America growth should come back very strongly from Q2. Europe, we still continue to grow at 10 to 15%. As far as the U.S. business goes, we think, Q1 was pretty much the bottom. And I think from Q2, assuming we get these two approvals, you should see growth coming back in the U.S. market. Q over Q growth and maybe Y over Y growth. So I think... we still continue to remain pretty comfortable with the guidance of 10 to 15% if I look at the growth across the different geographies.
So the two approvals that you spoke about, could you give some more light to that? And especially we already, half of the quarter is done. Are these like really big and you will have like, in 1 month sales, you could see a good... or how should we think about it?
So one of them is an injectable product. We have a tentative approval. The day one launch is the 22nd, I think, of this month. So that should be a good approval, and we think it will be limited competition. So we should get at least a month of sales in this quarter, and then the second one is a semi-solid, right, where we have CGT designation, which again, we are, there's only one other generic player, so it should be a limited competition opportunity, almost $200 million plus sales currently. So I think both these opportunities will could give a good upside to Q2, and then for the rest of the year should look positive. The other thing is, as far as the U.S. goes, is after, you know, post the Monroe inspection, right, one of the injectables that got inspected in Monroe, we anticipate approval around the Jan timeframe, and that again could be a limited competition, big opportunity. So I think for us, the U.S. business at this point, we think we've pretty much hit the bottom. You know, given that Mupirocin also has come off a lot, right, and is not a big contributor anymore to the U.S. business, right, we think from here on, growth should come back into the U.S. business.
So would it be fair to say that, you know, in the past you said high single-digit growth in the U.S., that is possible given the current pipeline?
I think mid you know, between 5 to 10%, we think is still possible in the U.S. given the current pipeline.
Okay, fair enough. And second question is on, you know, your comment again on the fiscal 20 outlook that conclude at least one partnership in innovative and specialty asset. So are we talking about the big bang U.S. or the, you know, the smaller markets like we have done in the past, like China and others?
So, Prakash, we've kept that as a very broad objective for us. You know, we have a number of partnering discussions ongoing between our Xolair, you know, biosimilar, between the Ryaltris partnerships that we're talking of in the U.S., in Europe, and some of the innovative products, right, that we're talking of. So we've kept it very broad as an objective. On the innovation side, you know, clearly, if you see, we have a number of milestones coming up. So we have 27864 phase 2B data coming out in Jan. We have GBR830 phase 2B data coming out in March, April, the phase 2B trial. So along with all the oncology work that we're doing, where we can, you know, we think we can get some positive results out of the oncology stuff, right, yet this year. So there are multiple milestones, and our current focus on the innovative entity is we think, you know, we would want a capital raise in Q4 before going out and aggressively looking for partners on the innovation side. But as we speak, we also have partnering discussions ongoing. So we don't know how it will play at the end of the day.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone who would like to ask a question, you may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Neha Manpuria from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. My first question is on Ryaltris. You know, it seemed just in the previous question that we would now like to out-license Ryaltris and even possibly Xolair. Any reason, sir, for the change in strategy? Because to last quarter, we were expecting to commercialize this sometime in October, November. I understand that could get delayed with the CRL, but any reason for this change rather than doing it ourselves to out-license it?
I mean, our view is, you know, there are some substantial changes happening in the U.S. environment, right? The whole specialty environment, and we think the reimbursement environment is very challenging. Given these changes, we think, you know, we think we are better off partnering this out as opposed to putting feet on the ground, because at the end of the day, if we do put people, you know, it's a long-drawn payback period, right? So at this point, we've changed our strategy on the respiratory side, and our view is, you know, partnership, we think, would be a better strategy for Ryaltris, just given the broad infrastructure required.
And in that case, we had acquired Exeltis. I know it's not for the in the same therapy, but eventually, do you see that phasing out also, given it's performing below expectation?
So we are assessing what we do with on the derm side, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Okay, understood. My second question is on Remo. You know, we've announced a partnership with Torrent, you indicated another one. What's the thought process here? Do you think the brand could see, you know, more growth because of these? I mean, given we already have a diabetes sales force, why partner with other companies?
I mean, if you see, you know, the general trend, and it's not just us. If you see what Big Pharma has done in India also, right, the other two or three SGLT2s which are available, they all have partnerships with at least two or three other companies to increase the share of voice and the noise level, right, in the space. So in order to combat that kind of noise level, right, we think it's important to have partners, right, co-promote side-by-side with us or co-market with us, right, to increase the overall noise level for the molecule. And so far, I mean, the response to Ryaltris has been really positive. You know, we're clocking every month, we're seeing substantial improvement in the sales for Remogliflozin. And I think going forward, you know, this could be a really big product. You know, I mean, the unit sales are already up to, you know, in unit sales, we are already up to the top four or five players. And not only will we gain share from the other SGLT2s, but we think given the price points, right, you could see a lot of switching of prescriptions even from the DPP-4s and the sulfonylureas and the other classes.
Understood. And my last question on Latin America, you know, other than Novartis, how, you know, do we expect the core business to, you know, how do we expect that to pan out?
So,
because I'm assuming Novartis would take some time to ramp up.
Actually, Novartis is, we've taken over an existing business, so there's no ramp up.
Okay.
And so we've already taken over their existing business, right? So there is existing sales, and that's why Q2, you'll see a big delta in terms of growth coming to us, right? But besides that, you know, we launched, or we're in the process of launching Beclomethasone in Brazil, which will be a big driver. We have a couple of other launches coming up this year in Brazil. In Mexico, we have a few launches. So I think Latin America for us, you know, other than the broad economic challenges and the currency challenges, which is highly unpredictable, right? But in terms of the core business and the secondary sales growth will continue to stay strong.
Understood. So what is the size of the business that we have taken over from Novartis?
So we're not disclosing that, but it's an existing business, right, where they were selling the three brands, and those three brands are now we've taken over that. So we will accrue the sales and the profits for those brands.
Understood. Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Fan Philip from Wellington Management. Please go ahead.
My question has been asked. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The next question is from the line of Chirag Dagli from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, you indicated that Mupirocin has come off a lot. Can you indicate the contribution in first quarter versus, say, four quarters back? How much was it?
I mean, my guess, Chirag, is we would have lost maybe about 5-7 million in the quarter on account of Mupirocin.
So this used to annualize at, so this used to be about $15 odd million a quarter. That's now down to 10-ish.
Correct.
Okay, sir. And, sir, where are we at the, from the API stake sale, please?
So we are still in discussions, on the minority investor in API, but I think the way to look at it is we also have a backup plan there. We have a number of, you know, we are divesting a number of non-core assets. So I think this year, you know, we've kept ourselves an objective of taking off maybe about 700 to 800 crores of debt this year. Next year, you know, given if all goes well in Q4 and we are successful with the capital raise in NewCo, we think automatically, you know, that investment from GPL will reduce, right? So you could safely assume from year on, you know, every year we will take off a minimum of 700-800 crores of debt.
The 700-800 crores is assuming you you end up consummating the API sticks.
Even if we don't consume it, as I said, we have a backup plan of divesting certain non-core assets, right? So there are multiple things that we are doing.
Okay, sir. And sir, is there an EBITDA margin guidance that you want to indicate?
So EBITDA margin, you know, we, if you, you know, you can safely assume we are tracking at around 16.5%. But if you add back the investment that we are making in NewCo, right, you know, the actual cash EBITDA, you know, is close to about 25%, right? I mean, if you see every quarter we are investing, you know, almost $30 million, right, on an average, right, into NewCo. So if you add that back, assuming we do the capital raise in Q4, the effective EBITDA, you know, the cash EBITDA is close to about 25%, right, which should play out once we do the capital raise in NewCo.
Understood, sir. And sir, is there an impact of the Argentina, you know, currency crisis on our business? If you can articulate what sort of impact will it have?
So, Chirag, nothing very substantial. Yeah, I mean, obviously, locally there, I mean, the currency gets hit, but we do have a local production unit, and it's more internal. So, I don't see it such a big player in that.
But when you convert those profits into INR, would it not get hurt?
Very marginal. I mean, it's not such a big play for us on an overall basis.
And we basically, Chirag, use Argentina manufacturing only as a conversion site. So materials, you know, are imported, they're converted, and they're exported from there, you know. So
not exposure to that currency is not much, is what
it is. It's
not substantial. Yeah.
It's not much. And, sir, what explains the difference between the, you know, reported PAT and the OCI? There is a 41 crore difference for the quarter. What explains that?
So that is basically, as you look at your results, you know, across the geography, the other entities, also you translate those asset liabilities, etc., based on closing rate or average rate. So especially in some of the geographies like Switzerland, etc., we had some impact which was on the more on the positive side. So that's why that comes as a part of the foreign currency FCTR translation business.
All of this is FCTR, sir?
Sorry?
All of this 41 crores is FCTR, sir?
Mostly, most of it, yeah.
And is this a cash item, sir? 41 crores, would we have received this cash in the quarter?
No, we cannot say it's a cash item, okay? It will not be a cash item in time.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anyone who would like to ask a question, you may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Alok Dalal from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. Glenn, which are the non-core assets that you're looking to divest?
So, Alok, they are spread across multiple geographies, so I really can't give you a list. But basically, these are assets which are not in the areas of derm, respiratory, and some of our core therapeutic areas, right? So these fall outside of that, right, in various geographies, right, where we really don't have a pipeline to support these portfolios, right? And we think they're not going to add a lot to us.
Sure. But will that give you a substantial raise which will help you reduce the debt levels?
Yeah, absolutely, Alok. And that's why we've said the, you know, we've given that objective, right? So,
And one question on the U.S. Glenn, in the past, we've had quite a few limited number of, or rather limited competition product opportunities. You've been in the first wave of product approvals for quite a number of products, but unfortunately, the ramp-up has not happened. So what needs to change with the next set of limited competition product launches for you in the US?
I don't think, Alok, you can, I mean, the environment is very different, right? As you know, right? There's no such thing as a truly limited competition product. It's only how long and will you get, right? What's the window, right, that's available? And I think increasingly gone are the days where you could have, you know, sustained amount of exclusivity or de facto exclusivity on a product. So I think given that environment, it's important to, you know, keep things in context, right? But our base is small, right? I mean, on a, you know, $105 million base, right? I mean, even a $10 million swing or a, you know, a $20, $30 million swing can make a big impact to the growth numbers, right? Because of the low base, right, of the U.S. business.
Yeah. Glenn, when you say you have a fairly strong pipeline with, let's say, you know, next quarter two limited competition launches and a stronger pipeline going forward, but your growth guidance on low base, as you mentioned, is only 5 to 10%. So where do you
think the growth connected? So yeah. There, the reason for that, Alok, is we are losing 20 million on Mupirocin alone, right, if you take on an annualized basis, right? So you are losing Mupirocin. You have a 5%, let's say close to a mid-single-digit price erosion, right, on the rest of the portfolio. And then on top of that, you're loading the new products, right? So when you do the math, right, you'll see it becomes very hard to grow beyond 5 to 10%, right? I mean, that's the way to think about it, right? Obviously, once the Mupirocin effect is gone, right, which we are hoping that, you know, there's two more quarters. I think from Q4 we saw lower sales of Mupirocin. Then automatically the growth will also jump accordingly. Then we'll only have to deal with the 5% regular price erosion that we see on the products, and the new product approvals keep kicking in. So that's what we are dealing with in the US.
Okay, all right. Thank you for taking my questions.
Sure.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You may press star and one to ask a question. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The next question is from the line of Nirmal Gopi from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. This is Nitin here. Thanks for taking my question. Sir, Glenn, on the US, you know, how do you look at the whole, you know, generic, given the market changes which have been happening? Both the specialty and the generic piece, I mean, how are you now approaching those businesses with the three of you? I mean, if you look at the current run rate for the generic R&D spend, that's reasonably low versus what, you know, at about 100 crores a quarter or thereabouts. So, I mean, how are you internally approaching these two pieces now going forward?
I mean, I think on the generic side, you know, very clearly we think it still continues to be a good business from a margin profile. So we continue to file, you know, limited competition products and some complex generics and so on and so forth, right, across different dosage forms. So from that perspective, we still continue to file and grow that business, right, on as far as the U.S. goes. On the specialty side, obviously, I mean, we think that's a much more challenging environment, and we think we need a much deeper pipeline of products, right, which has significant value creation to get reimbursed and to get real value out of the U.S. market, right, because of the changing dynamics in terms of the reimbursement environment and the you know, patient copay and the rebates and all the other stuff that the U.S. is going through. So I think on the specialty side, we continue to build a portfolio, but it's very limited and it's very focused, right, in terms of what we will eventually bring into market over a 3 to 5 year period. But in the near term, we don't see specialty contributing anything significant to Glenmark over the next 2-3 years, U.S. specialty.
And on Xolair, would you go ahead with the program only if you find a partner, or where do we stand on that?
So we are very close to bringing a partner on board.
And how long will the trials go on for this product? So what could be a potential launch timeline for this product?
I can't give you the details, Nitin, because I mean, there are too many complexities, right? As you know, for a biosimilar, I mean, you've got the patent dance, you've got all kinds of other attributes one has to look at, and not just the filing and the filing dates and stuff like that. So I think, I mean, the good news is on Xolair, we are the first biosimilar, right, that we know of, right? In the clinics, completed phase one and ready to start phase three. So we are ahead in the game, but it's hard to give you a timeline.
Okay. And on the cost front, how should we look at sort of sense on how the fixed cost? I mean, we talked about cost optimization in the past.
Yeah.
How should we look at this for this year and next year?
So I think, you know, there's a lot of effort internally that we are making to control costs, bring down costs. Manpower cost is one area where we've guided towards that we will see lower manpower costs going forward. And even other areas, I mean, in terms of your cost of goods, you know, procurement, we're working on. We have multiple initiatives within the company ongoing to improve the overall cost line item.
And just to add to it, on the indirect front also, we've done quite a successful program last year. So we've seen some benefits last year, and we'll see a more annualized benefit in the current year. So on the cost front, we've been pretty tight on how we manage all of that. Okay. And even on the procurement costs, etc., we had various internal programs that we run to ensure that we try and maintain our margins. You know, that's been the ongoing plan.
Am I on the, has there been any meaningful impact of, what's been the impact rather of Ind AS on our, on different line items for us? Because our depreciation interest costs seem to be pretty high.
Yeah, so depreciation is up by about 10 crores. So it's about 8 crores is due to the new change in this Ind AS lease accounting. So that's been one of the reasons why it's gone up. And the small portion went into the finance cost, but also we had some one-time upfront fees to be paid. So all those, that's the reason why some of these line items went up.
And there would have been a corresponding positive impact on our EBITDA also, right, for that?
Partly, but not too much, because we haven't taken it from a long time back. We have done it from 1st of April only. So we've not taken a big retrospective effect from behind.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone who would like to ask a question, you may press star and 1. The next question is from the line of Girish Bakru from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the question. On Remo, just wanted your sense. Can you share the patient number currently on Remo?
I don't have the details offhand, Girish, but we can get you that. But I think if you see unit sales, okay, reported by I think IMS, IQVIA, right? I mean, we are among the top 4 in the SGLT class already. Right, in terms of unit sales, just in the first 2 months. So a lot of the other, you know, and there are about, you know, 12 or 13 players, right, in SGLT. If you take the, including the co-marketing partners, right, and we are already number 4 in unit sales. So just to tell you the success that we are having with Remo, right, and I think, you know, this is only month 2, month 3, right. And of course, units, the reason I'm saying unit sales is obviously the price point is 50% lower, right? And this is twice daily dosing compared to some of the guys who have once daily, right? But it's still very early days and we are seeing some very good success.
Right. But generally, on your sense, given that there's no new class after SGLT2, do you think like current base of 700,000 patients, will that double in 3 years, or broad sense where this market is going to go? Any idea?
I think this is going to be huge, right? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, so far, I mean, unless there is some new side effect or something which comes up for the class, right, which one never knows, right, in how things evolve. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, this will clearly be the, you know, be the number one prescribed product over time, right, going forward. Because, I mean, the weight loss, the control, the glycemic control, the, you know, you name it, right? HbA1c control is fantastic. So you're seeing significant impacts, right? And I think overall the class is doing very well, right? The growth numbers are 30-40% plus, right? Even though it's a 800+ crore market, growing at 30-40% in excess of that, right? The whole class in terms of value. And we see that sustaining. And now, you know, because we've bought it, we're launching at a lower price point, you know, you can see doctors moving from other anti-diabetic medications to SGLT2s because it's much more affordable to their patients.
Right. And just to clarify, the price points for the other molecules in the class, especially for the partner companies, would also be 50% higher than yours?
No. So, yeah. So the whole class is at between 40 to 60 rupees a tablet, right? And we are at, or per day therapy, right? 40 to 60 rupees. And we are at 25 rupees cost of per day therapy, right?
Right. And when do you see the first line extension here?
So hopefully, I mean, this quarter we'll launch our first line extension.
Okay. So broadly, Glenn, on the India front, can we comfortably take 15% plus growth?
I think so.
And just last one on the other expense side, I mean, given the this quarter also it shows good control, with Ryaltris cost offloaded, any room for further control in other expense line?
Yeah, Girish, we continue to look at indirect spends in a big way. So obviously, I mean, while we kind of removed a lot of the expenses, but that plus some amount of tightening on the manpower front as well. So I think we should see some benefits further as well.
But were there any front-ending costs already there for Altris that will come off? No.
There was nothing so much. We were actually, you know, in the stage when we were looking at what's to be done next to ramp up or what to be done. So at that point of time, we feel looking at the market conditions, it may be better to take a little more conservative approach to the whole thing.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anyone who would like to ask a question, you may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Sayan Mukherjee from Nomura Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Glenn, on the India formulation of 13% growth, can you tell us, you know, excluding the divestment that you did last year, what's the underlying growth? And also the consumer business seems to be doing well at 20s growth rate. So how's the pharma underlying business growth?
So, I mean, I would say it's about 17-18%, somewhere thereabouts, right? If you assume the divestment that we did last year, you know, it should be at around 17-18%.
And so within that, the consumer, which is like 10%, is growing at 27%, right? I mean, it's around 10% of your revenues.
Yeah.
Okay. And on the Baddi side, you know, what's your view? Like, what's the impact? How much ANDAs, how many ANDAs are pending from there? And,
So Baddi, you know, we have virtually no filings or pending approvals. So, and currently it's less than 10% of our US sales actually comes from Baddi because it only makes steroidal derm products for us, right? So it's a small piece, less than 10% of total sales. And nothing really pending from there. Most of our new filings are all coming, the bulk of them are coming out of Monroe right now. We probably have, I would guess, about 8 filings going out this year for Monroe, and mainly on the injectable side and nebulizers and those kind of dosage forms. So that's the current situation, right? So out of the 20 odd filings that we target every year, right, this year almost 8 of them are going out of Monroe. The rest, some of them are going from Indore, some from Aurangabad. So I think that's the spread.
Okay. On the specialty front, you know, on the derma acquisition, Exeltis, that you did, what's the impact on the P&L? I would assume since the revenues are not very high, I'm just wondering what's the kind of cost that you're incurring and the impact, you know, this is having on the EBITDA level, and what's your plan on this going forward?
So, to put it this way, Sain, actually it's more like the investment in the brand that we have done. I mean, we haven't really ramped up in a big way to increase the cost on that front. So obviously we'll watch and wait and see how this thing plays out in the next couple of quarters.
So at this point, when you look at the Q1 financials, you would say it's not having a major impact.
It's not having a major impact, yes.
Mm-hmm. And this finally, you know, on the fixed asset addition and intangibles, the 70 crore that you mentioned, you know, does this include the Novartis deal in Brazil?
Yeah, some portion, yes.
I mean, there would be more in Q2, is it?
It may not be so much in Q2, but we have some fronting that we had to do for that. And then going forward, obviously in Q1, we also in-license some products in Europe, etc. So those are the additional costs.
Okay. So tell me your numbers for this year. What's your expectation on fixed addition and intangibles?
So we're looking at about an 800 crore complete addition, which 750 to 800 crores. Of which fixed assets could be somewhere about 400 to 500, and the other one, intangibles, will be about max 300 crores or so.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chirag Dagli from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, for Xolair partner, you are looking at the partner who can just fund the development or also market?
So this will be also a commercialization partner, Chirag. You know, so we are looking at someone who can run the phase 3, invest in the phase 3 and commercialize the product. Right. And we will end up keeping some rights for some of the markets where we have a presence, and it'll be like a royalty-based deal.
Okay, that is helpful, sir. And sir, on the two products that you mentioned, one injectable approval, what is the size of this product that the one that is expected end of this?
It's about $350 million.
And can you talk about the sustainability of this, limited competition environment for this?
I mean, Chirag, the U.S. environment is hard to predict, right, as to how many players will end up being there. So that's something we can't comment on.
Sure. And on the CGT product, sir, I think you mentioned there is one generic player already.
Yeah, there is one.
So you will be second in line, is it?
Yeah.
But you still get exclusivity.
I mean, I think the technical aspect bases that we have a CGT status, okay. Yeah.
And this will last for 6 months?
No, again, Chirag, I don't know the details, so I think it's best that we take it offline.
Okay, sir. And, sir, the last bit, in terms of working capital, if you can indicate regionally, you know, what sort of working capital days and how have they changed over the last, say, couple of years?
So I think, I mean, this year we are doing a very good job on the working capital side, right? Particularly inventories, and you'll see inventories coming off quite substantially by the end of the year. So I think overall, the number of days will keep improving from here.
No, sir, but, across regions, which are the high working capital regions versus the lower?
Actually, if you look at high, I mean, it's not exactly like high and low. I mean, on an overall basis, you have a certain number of working capital. So obviously, you do have some working capital days in the U.S. and some of the other markets. So actually, been working very consistently to ensure that across the line, you know, whether it is inventory, debtors, creditors, we're trying to bring it down, and so far we've been doing a reasonable job on that.
So versus US, how different would be ROW working capital, sir?
Again, ROW, there will be some markets where the working capital may be a little bit on the higher side, like Russia, etc. But there will be some markets like Asia where it may be a little bit lower. So it plays across the markets. Yeah.
On a net basis, it is not substantially different in US or in ROW markets.
It may not be so much in difference, yeah. Because there you have credit terms depending on the channel, 60 days, 90 days, whatever, you get paid.
Then so you have the only aberration is really India, sir, which will be significantly lower versus otherwise most of the other markets are significantly higher. Yeah,
definitely, yeah. Always the export markets in most pharma companies will always be on the higher side, yeah.
Okay, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza for closing comments.
Thanks, moderator. We'll just read the disclaimer and close the call. The information, statement and analysis made during the call describing the company's objective, projections and estimates are forward-looking statements and progressive within the meaning of applicable security laws and regulations. The analysis contained herein is based on numerous assumptions. Actual results may vary from those expressed or implied depending upon economic conditions, governing policies and other incidental factors. No representation or warranty either expressed or implied is provided in relation to this judgment. The presentation should not be regarded by recipients as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. With this, we end Glenmark's Q1 earnings call. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.